Off the Ball.
GAA.
And any team that has David Clifford, you know, has another chance of winning. You know, I wouldn't have said Armagh were at a back-to-back level, but they're answering all the questions. They're ticking all the boxes.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
The News Wrap on Off the Ball.
With UPMC Orthopaedic Care. When things don't move, rotate or bend like they used to, choose us to help you get back in action.
This is News Talk.
Good evening and welcome along to Wednesday night's Off the Ball. It's Owen here with you until 10 o'clock this evening. We've got Matt Williams coming up from 7:30 to dissect the Lions win over the Queensland Reds this morning. After 8 o'clock, we'll have Richie Hogan here in studio to look ahead to the All-Ireland Hurling semi-finals, which are happening this weekend. And after 9, we'll be speaking to Dyran O'Sullivan, a multiple All-Ireland winner with Cork, to look ahead to the LGFA quarter-finals, which are on across the weekend as well. We're also going to be bringing you the latest piece from our Settle In series. And this week, we are sitting down here in studio with two members of the Emerald Warriors rugby team, which is the oldest gay-inclusive rugby team in Ireland. Our number is 0879 180 180. If you have any comments or any questions for any of our guests tonight, including our panel of experts here in studio right now, Cameron Hill, how are you doing?
Not too bad, Owen.
And Stephen Doyle, how are you?
Good, thanks, Owen.
Is this what we would call a bumper Wednesday of sport? It's not often you can throw Wednesday in after bumper in this regard. We could have woken up this morning, started by training your eyes on matters on the east coast of Australia, seeing our beloved British and Irish Lions doing it against the Queensland Reds, and flicking over to the BBC for an afternoon of Wimbledon action before flicking over to whatever broadcaster you like for a double helping on the first day of Euro 2025. Finland getting the job done, I believe?
Yes, 1-0. 1-0. It's something of a shock. Iceland were expected to do pretty well in this tournament, but Finland, famous nemesis of the Republic of Ireland during their World Cup campaign a couple of years ago, managed to get over the line. So already off the flyer.
A red card for the Icelanders as well, so that didn't help their cause. But
is this what it feels like to be a weekend sports broadcaster? When you've actually got multiple things going on?
Saturday sports boy incoming. Yeah. It feels like, yeah, because it's the span of the sport for the day. Like, you're getting ready for the Lions at what? Half 10, getting yourself psychologically prepped. Wimbledon was delayed today by rain, so the Lions was the only show in town in the late morning to early afternoon. And then, as you say, as you go through the day, you've got Wimbledon, you've got football later on tonight. It's what I'm here for.
Yeah, and I stayed up, not stayed up, well, yeah, I suppose you could stay up, because it was after 10 o'clock before the last match of Wimbledon finished last night. And it's great. I love those late Wimbledon games, like when the shadow's being cast over centre court, and you usually get epic games around that time of the evening. So, yeah, just it was great when you were in school, wasn't it? Like, because you're on your summer holidays and you could sit on the couch, especially if the weather was bad, you could sit on the couch from about 11 in the morning, 12 in the afternoon, BBC Wimbledon coverage kicks off, and just stay there for, you know, 9, 10 hours. Yeah. Watching tennis was great. But as you say, it is brilliant. Just, you know, when we come into the office here in the mornings, stick on the Lions match, tennis coming up straight afterwards. And then we've got a summer football tournament. What more could you want?
Well, a summer football tournament with Ireland is what more you could want.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like stealing our joyous memories. Are we actively rooting against Wales? Did we all celebrate when they got thrown into the group of death and just wish nothing but bad things upon Wales?
It breeds life into the Irish-Welsh hostilities.
We've gone after the Welsh rugby team. It's time to go after the Welsh women's football team. These are our new nemesis.
Oh, like this Celtic Cousins nonsense that we that somebody's rammed down our throats. Like, it's absolutely ridiculous, because, like, you know, the rugby teams hate each other. The football teams, men's and women, hate each other. So
I'm sure the darts teams don't like each other either.
Let's see them crashing out.
Animosity there.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
I for one was pretty happy for Jack Morgan this morning, the only Welshman left in the squad, scoring his try, getting his medal around his neck as player of the match against Queensland Reds. So,
well,
I don't
if Wales had provided a few more players to that Lions squad, you know, maybe we could be a better squad, better team, British and Irish Lions. You know, one Welshman, that's pretty pathetic, isn't it?
Yeah. Not great.
You wanted to chat about Novak Djokovic's miracle, Stephen.
Well, yeah. Like, it's, you know, I watched this match. It was a really good match. Novak Djokovic playing against France's Alexander Muller. And I read this interesting piece in the Daily Mail. Sorry, I've completely forgot to include the byline. But the Daily Mail's match report following the game. And it says, Novak Djokovic has credited a doctor's miracle pills for helping him to battle through an illness through his first round match at Wimbledon on Tuesday night. Listen, if I'm reading an article and I see a top sportsman taking miracle pills, I'm kind of thinking, ooh, I want some of these miracle pills. Well, maybe they could help me.
Sure, a lot
some
of other people do too.
Aches and pains. But the Serbian star asked for a doctor to be called out to the court shortly after losing the second set of the match to France's Alexandra Muller. Djokovic had appeared visibly unwell and after discussions during a medical timeout was given a tablet by the doctor to ease his symptoms. The seven-time Wimbledon champion was then able to seize control of the match, breaking Muller's impressive resistance. Djokovic won 10 of the final 12 games following his medical timeout, ultimately wrapping up a 6-1, 6-7, 6-2, 6-2 victory. When asked on courts about the illness, Djokovic suggested he may have been suffering from a stomach bug. And he's quoted here as saying, I went from feeling my absolutely best for a set and a half to my absolute worst for about 45 minutes. Whether it was a stomach bug, I don't know what it is, but just struggled with that. The energy kind of kicked back after some doctor's miracle pills and I managed to finish the match on a good note.
It was just Motilium. That's all it was. miracle pills can't help your forehand, is what people say as well, Steve-O.
That's it.
That famous saying, yeah.
We've all been there. We've all been there when we're struggling a little bit. And I think probably in day-to-day life, we need to find out who this doctor is and get some of these miracle pills to help us all in day-to-day lives if ever we're having a bad day.
Yeah, I think Hugo Keenan could get onto him because...
He wasn't feeling his best earlier.
No, he wasn't feeling well. So maybe Djokovic could give him the number of his doc.
Yeah, and Andy Farrell described in visceral detail exactly how Hugo Keenan was feeling in the post-match today. So,
it was Djokovic, wasn't it, that Conor Nyland was playing against in his biggest ever game of his career when he certainly went to a bad restaurant, misplaced sort of kind of advice to go to this restaurant in New York, and whatever he ate, he was certainly in need of some miracle pills when he went up against Novak Djokovic the next day, arrives at the net after he's retired due to illness, and Novak Djokovic barely even acknowledges his existence. Mm. That's because he hadn't got Novak Djokovic's miracle pills, perhaps. So Conor Nyland would also be interested in what that doctor had to say, but I know we should say he's obviously just something for the stomach, he is alive and well in this tournament. We're just watching Emma Raducanu take the first set there against Vondrousova. They're into the second set there, so maybe we'll have more evening drama tonight.
It's the best 2 weeks, I think, of the year for me, because it's so exciting. As you say, it's the slow burn or the long boil, if you'd like, of just matches going on well into the evening, really, like, particularly first or second round five setters. I remember Dustin Brown beating Rafa Nadal in like 2014, completely unfancied. And just this amazing match that you were completely glued to for like the guts of 5 hours. That's what you want. It's everything about Wimbledon that's really nice. It's Olivia Rodrigo and Roy Hodgson being in the royal box today, which felt very like technically Pablo Picasso and Michael B. Jordan could have met. It felt like a crossing of multiple generations there. It's the Alexander Muller is a huge casualty for the backwards baseball cap type player that I love so much about Wimbledon because we've lost the likes of John Isner and Leighton Hewitt and plenty of other Berrettini's gone too, so that particular fashion trend is...
Randy Knus, he likes a headband though.
Well, he likes like a headband.
A tennis player.
Yeah. So still there, but it's brilliant. I love it.
I think that's where you're going to start as well tonight in the news round, Cameron, and the news round is with UPMC Orthopaedic Care. When things don't move, rotate or bend like they used to, choose us to help you get back in action.
Yeah, we'll kick off with some results from today. Carlos Alcaraz securing safe passage to the third round in the men's singles on day 3 of Wimbledon. He beat home qualifier Oliver Tarvet in straight sets on centre court today. Another men's seed suffered an early exit, however, with 12 seed Francis Tiafoe losing by 3-1 to Cam Nouri. 4 seed Jasmine Paolini has taken the opening set in her second round clash against Kamila Rakhimova. Lucky loser Solana Sierra came from a set down to beat home favourite Katie Bolter 2-1 on court number 1 earlier. And as you say, Emma Raducanu in action against the 2023 champion Markéta Vondrousova in centre court. She is currently set up on Vondrousova. Top seed Arina Sabalenka, meanwhile, booked her spot in the third round this afternoon, courtesy of a straight sets win over Maria Buskova of Czechia. While other high-profile players such as Coco Gauff and Jess Pegula suffered shock exit yesterday, Sabalenka believes it's disappointing to see so many seeds out already.
Honestly, it's really sad to see so many upsets in the tournament, in both actually draws, girls and men's. So it's sad to see, but honestly, I'm just trying to focus on myself. Of course, I know about all of these upsets, but I think it's really important to focus on yourself and take it one step at a time and do not really look at the draw, because this is something what can create a lot of nerves and a lot of doubts and stuff. So I'm just trying to take it one step at a time. As I said earlier, I know that if I'm focused, if I'm there, if I'm fighting, I know that I'm gonna have my chance in each match. So I'm just trying to take it one step at a time.
Arina Sabalenka there speaking like the meme of the man in the tuxedo where he's like, went to my hater's funeral to make sure that man was dead. the sincerity in her voice. Oh, it's so sad to see so many upsets. Really, yeah. The other two of the top three in the world are all gone. I don't know how I'll ever recover from this.
She's looking mean, I have to say. I think she should do it. She should win the whole thing. Coco Gauff, interesting. I was looking at one of the stats last night. There's so many of these stats because of the seeds dropping out. So it's the first time a Grand Slam has lost four of the top 10 seeds in both the men's and women's singles in the first round. Gauff, obviously the second seed, so she would have been, I suppose, hoping to meet Sabalenka in the final this year. But it was interesting just reading some of her comments afterwards. She's obviously just 21 still. She's got two majors, winning this year's French Open, 23 US Open. But she said, I feel like mentally I was a little bit overwhelmed with everything that came after the French Open. A tearful Gauff said in her post-match press conference, I didn't feel like I had enough time to celebrate and also get back into it. So she won that French Open, then played the Berlin Open, I think about a week later. She got a bye to the second round in that one and then lost the first match against qualifier Wang Xinyu. And she's had about maybe 2.5 weeks with her feet up. Well, not her feet up, but she didn't get much chance to play on a grass tournament like the Berlin Open. And it just seems to be that French Open hangover has kind of affected her at Wimbledon.
The loud footballers of women's tennis really had their high point there about a month or two ago and just have been able to match it all summer long. So
I thought you were going to tell me her chauffeur got lost on the way to...
It's SW19, mate.
SW19.
Yeah. Or there was like an inside plan from a rival's driver. I'm still maintaining that Jim McGuinness was driving that bus or somebody in his team. That's a joke. Don't release a statement. On to the golf, Cameron.
Yeah, Leona Maguire has found out her pairing for the first two rounds of the KPMG Women's Irish Open. She'll go out tomorrow morning with Claire amateur Anya Dunnigan and three-time major champion Anna Norkvist for tomorrow's first round. They'll tee off their campaign at Carlton House at 9 o'clock tomorrow morning. Douglas's Sarah Byrne will set off alongside the English duo of Charlie Hull and Georgia Hall in the afternoon groupings. There are 16 Irish players in the field for the home championship, and Maguire believes playing against the world's top players can only help the up-and-coming Irish talents.
Yeah, I think it's huge. I think that's a big part of having this event. It's important for them to get the experience of playing in a big event like this, which, you know, the grandstands and the crowds and a big golf course. And I played with Olivia Costello and Lauren Walsh tomorrow and played my home with them, and you could tell Olivia was nervous, but she's young and it's a big experience. She's played in a few now, and every year I feel like they'll have learnt a bit more, and really nice to see so many of the girls doing well on the LET this year. And Anna had a good finish in Germany last week, and it's also Lauren's home course here in Carlton House. So 16 hours, it's a lot to have in the field, but I think that's a testament to this sort of event and what KPMG have done to grow the event year on year, and it's exactly sort of the momentum and the trajectory that we want this event.
Yeah, that's up and running tomorrow morning. Let's move on to the British and Irish Lions, Cameron.
They hammered the Queensland Reds by 52 points to 12 in the second game of their Australian tour today. Andrew Porter and Gary Ringrose among the try scorers as the Lions crossed the line 8 times in Brisbane. Finn Russell and Finn Smith kicked 6 conversions between them. Hugo Keenan was a late withdrawal from the tour's team due to illness, but James Ryan made his Lions debut from the bench. Head coach Andy Farrell was pleased with how his side responded after a slow first half.
It was a bit of everything. I don't think it was flowing from us. It was a little bit stop start at times, but when we was on, I thought we played some really good stuff. I thought we got over a bit of a slow start. I thought the Reds came out the blocks pretty aggressive, really, and dominated that first 10-15 minutes. So that's good for us. But I thought we settled down pretty well and played some good stuff.
players.
I think throughout the game, then when the game's won, we got a little bit stop start. The continuity of our game wasn't quite what we wanted it to be, but again, defended pretty well. At times, our collision work was pretty good, which gave us the full line, and hence why we kept them out again in the second half. This is where we're at now with the tour. The games are coming thick and fast, and we're using those games to fast track ourselves to the place that we want to be. So there's constant learnings there.
And Daniel Schofield in the Daily Telegraph has reported that Elliot Daly looks set to be ruled out of the Lions tour after suffering a suspected broken forearm. So we saw it with the ice pack on it. We saw that he was going off for an x-ray and we waited for official confirmation, but Telegraph going with the line that he looks set to be ruled out of the Lions tour. 15 was already a fascinating position. Obviously, Blair Kinghorn was playing his top 14 final last week. Hugo Keenan looked to be in the box seat. Then he picked up an injury. Then he got sick. So Saturday, you might even have a situation where Kinghorn plays a little bit, Keenan plays a little bit. Neither man will be at 100%. And there could be a Bolter situation here because somebody's going to have to come into the squad for Elliot Daly.
You couldn't ask Marcus Smith to maybe deputise there after Argentina run out.
Of course, like, yeah.
He'd be the next man up. A real disaster.
Yeah.
So you never know. Like, if I was a... If I was Jamie Osborne, I'd keep my phone off silent for the next few days.
Do you think he'd be the next one in? I actually haven't thought about this.
He loves him so much, and he can play a multiple of different positions. Like, you know, if someone like a Bundy or a Sione Tuipulotu end up getting injured, he can slot in there. He can just play in a multitude of positions, and Andy Farrell really likes him as a player. So, yeah.
I think the key question here is, where is Jamie Osborne on holidays? Has he taken a vacation somewhere, you know, around Asia, New Zealand, kind of?
Yeah.
That's usually the story, though, isn't it? You know, you make sure you go on holidays near the Lions tour if you think you're the next man up.
Well, if he's in Australia, just don't come across Barry Murphy, is that famous you had to be there story.
yeah.
Goes, because that doesn't end well. But, yeah, be interested to see where he's floating around.
He's in Tbilisi.
He's in Tbilisi, yeah.
Yeah.
I completely forgotten that this Ireland tour was
happening. You're not the only one known.
So it's a bit far away. Like, I mean, I'm not sure, is it smart or a lack of foresight to not fix a tour for like a tour of Fiji and Samoa?
Closer to Australia than Ireland anyway, Jordan.
That is true. He's most of the distance done already. I think that is your next story actually, Cameron, is it?
Well, the Ireland men's under-20s team under-20s. Showing two changes for their World Rugby Championship clash with host Italy on Friday. Scrum half Will Wooten and prop Alex Usinov come into the side for that game in Viadana. Neil Doak's Chargers are looking to go 2-2 after getting over the line against Georgia in their opening game on Sunday.
Yes, tomorrow actually that the Ireland team gets named. So maybe that's the key point. If Jamie Osborne's not
notable
in that team, you know exactly where he is. Right, where do you want to go next, Cameron?
Well, we'll move to football next because the FAI has confirmed today that Vice President John Finnegan has left the association with immediate effect. Mr. Finnegan took up the role in 2023 and had been a member of the association's board since 2019. In a statement to Off the Ball, the FAI added that Mr. Finnegan's departure is due to personal and family reasons and thanked him for his service. Some transfer news as well, or some contract extension news today. Bohemians have confirmed that winger Dale Rooney will remain at the club until 2027. The 27-year-old has put pen to a new 2-year contract extension with the Premier Division side. Rooney has already racked up 4 goals and 5 assists in 22 league appearances this season. Softens the blow of the news that Lise Mousset has left Daly Mount Park by mutual consent today.
Ah, the Moose, we hardly knew you. Mm. But... listen, he scored 1 winning goal against Sligo Rovers in 9 appearances. So, and of course, the little flick for the goal against Shamrock Rovers in the opening day of the season at the Aviva Stadium. So, listen, it didn't work out, but he's made his contribution to what's been a good season so far for Bohemians. And it wasn't really a gamble financially because his contract was based on, you know, how many games he played, how many goals he scored. So Bohemians haven't invested a huge amount of money. So it was definitely a chance worth taking. Hasn't worked out, but they've got a new striker now after Douglas James Taylor signed yesterday. He's a good signing. And Dale Rooney, what a season he's having, because this is third season now at Dalymount Park. Damien Duff deemed him surplus to requirements at Shelburne when he took over at Talca Park. Last season, Rooney got 7 goals, 10 assists. He's got 4 and 5, as Cam says, after 22 matches, and 4 goals and 1 assist in his last 7. So his uptick in form, because he had a bit of a slow start this season, his uptick in form certainly has been part of the general uptick in Bohemians' form over the last few weeks.
I see you're wearing Bohemians blue for us today, Steve-O. Does it have the little Oasis logo on it?
This is Dublin blue, ahead of a double header against Dublin and Cork, or between Dublin and Cork, the women's quarter final, of course, and the hurling semi final on Saturday. So I'm getting ready.
They have the camogie on in Croke Park beforehand. Yeah, because I was thinking, why is this game on in Parnell Park? But I presume a lot of people go out to Parnell first, come back into Croke. It's like 1:15 or something on Saturday afternoon. On the hurlers, are you confident?
Not at all, really. But like, listen, on paper, Cork should be absolutely winning this match, but I have to say, Niall O'Callaghan has proved himself to be a very tactically astute manager. He also seems to be the kind of manager, he's a proper leader. I think he can generate great confidence and good feeling within the panel as well. So, like, who knows? Like, I've never seen a Limerick team, and listen, I know a lot of people say Limerick played poorly on the day, but I've never seen them being, you know, behind it, where Dublin, an opposition team, are getting out in front of their men so much in that match against Limerick. It was really, really incredible. And if they can bring that same, using the word intensity, but that kind of, you know, drive and desire to win that match, who knows? Because if they can beat Limerick, they can certainly beat Cork. But Cork are, on paper, huge, huge favourites to win it.
Give us your ratio prediction of the supporters in Croke Park on Saturday. This thing is going to be sold out.
I'm worried about this. Like, as a Dub, I'm really worried that we're going to have like swarms and swarms of red jerseys, you
nothing
know,
worse.
Getting off the buses and the trains and out of their cars with their packed lunches coming up from the Rebel County, which I have to say, I was down in the Rebel County last weekend.
Have you ever packed a lunch? Is packing a lunch exclusively for Cole Cheese? Is that what you're saying?
Without a doubt. Listen,
have you ever packed a lunch?
Not for Croke Park. Are you mad? Absolutely not. No.
Go on.
You might have a packet of crisps in the pocket and a bottle of mineral in the other pocket when you got to Croker with your dad as a kid. But this thing, I actually remember, I used to live in Fisborough and up on Avondale Road there, not far from Daly Mount Park, and the people come up from the country and park outside our houses, which meant we couldn't park anywhere, and then they'd open up there, they'd literally have you know, country tail, I don't want to say the word C-U-L, you know what I'm talking about, countryman tailgate parties, and they'd be sitting there with a flask in the boot and a packet of sandwiches that they open up, the tin foil, the whole lot. You're just thinking, This is mad, like, you know.
He's never even seen cling film.
And where would you have sent them? So say they're outside, you don't want to give your address away here or anything like that, but where would you have pointed them to? You know, where should they have been spending their money in that instance?
If the parking space on the public road in front of my house was vacant, you know, give them the old whistle over here, you know, say £20, I'll look after your car there, make a few pounds.
That could have been a nice little racket for you. So they're going to come with their tin foil and their squashed up sandwiches and their bottles of mineral, and they're going to beat Dublin at the gate.
Cardboard Sam McGuire Liam McCarthy replicas. They're red smoke bombs. No, listen, I do think the Dublin supporters will get behind the team this weekend, but I'd say 65-35 Cork, I think, at Croke Park. Like, the tickets, they had some more tickets, went up today, 2 o'clock, they were gone within 10 minutes, so...
And they weren't great tickets as well. I had a quick look at 2 o'clock as well, which suggests that, they're all going to be gone.
I love you, Cork, by the way. I do. I love Cork. And when I was down there last week, I have to say, there was a lot of bullish Cork men and women around the place, like, you know, and they certainly look like they're confident.
Yeah, it would be unusual for them to be feeling themselves a little bit.
Yeah.
Do you want to finish up on the Euros?
Yeah, the European Women's Championship is officially up and running this evening. So host nation Switzerland are up against the hotly tipped Norway in Basel from 8th already in Group A today. Finland stunned Iceland in Thun, winning by 1-0. Just one other story to bring you today. Chelsea have signed forward João Pedro from Brighton in a deal worth up to €70 million. The Brazil international has joined on a 7-year contract. He's already linked up with the Club World Cup squad in the USA and will be available for Saturday's quarterfinal with Palmeiras.
Does that change the picture for Evan Ferguson?
I don't think Brighton are going to hang on to him. I don't think Hertzler likes him. I really don't. I think he wants to get rid of him. But I think Chelsea, this looks like Nicholas Jackson's on the way out now, I think, for sure. I was just looking quickly at their conversion rate from last season. Nicholas Jackson, shot conversion rate, 13.2%. like Liam Delap, who they signed as well, his is 24%. He's playing in a team that got relegated. João Pedro, conversion rate 44.4% for Brighton last season, which is...
That must be a league high.
Incredible. I'm not sure exactly if it is, but his big chances conversion rate, 53.33%.
Conversion rate is shots to goals.
Exactly. Or chances, yeah.
Shots to goals. Yeah. 44% of his shots he scored goals. That's incredible.
And considering Chelsea's XG was underperforming so much, I think João Pedro could do really, really well with them.
Signing at a summer, potentially. All in the Game has been in touch in our YouTube comments to say, pretty much nailed on starter so far. Sheehan, Itoje, Conan, Jamison Gibson-Park, Russell and Lowe. Not as confident, but think it's going to be Genge at 1, Van der Fleer at 7, Tuipulotu at 12 and Freeman at 14. But Faz Senior loves Hansen. Smiley face. Thank you very much. You can also get in touch on WhatsApp 0879 180 180. And it is going to be Matt Williams up next chatting to us about this morning's win for the Lions in Queensland. Cameron, thank you for tonight's news round. Stephen Doyle, thank you. We'll take a quick break and the cash machine.